Can you tell we're still trying to get used to the services in this building, and especially the Wednesday night thing? It's a little awkward. We're not quite ready. Although I will say this, Kirk Tidball, some of you may have noticed, this is the same pulpit I've been using in Sunday school and then Pastor was using on Wednesday night. Kirk Tidball took this home and repainted it, restained it to match the building. And I thought he did an excellent job, and I was really appreciative of that. The only problem is now I feel way too high tone. I feel like, oh man, we're really getting fancy around here. We got everything really fancy, and that's kind of a good thing. But I wanted to go ahead. Some of you remember, I don't know how long ago it's been now, about 8 weeks ago I started on a Wednesday night teaching a different series through the book of Proverbs. And if you remember, I was talking about the fact that when I was a youth pastor, I had preached a series through the book of Proverbs, 62 messages in a row. I have a lot more than that in the book of the Proverbs because, as you know, the book of Proverbs is full of wisdom and understanding. And so here's what I want you to do. I'm going to preach another in that series tonight because, and I think it's somewhat appropriate because of the situation we're in right now. Who knows right now who is the next president? None of you know. We don't know. We kind of have an idea, I think unfortunate idea, that who might be the next president. But I don't know, and who knows what's going to happen. I just hope there's not a lot of problems and not a lot of trouble that goes along with that. I hope, I felt the same way right now that I felt the night that Clinton won, and then I felt the same way the night that Obama won, and then he won the second time. And all those things have happened, and yet I'm still here, and the church is still here, and we're still preaching, we're still teaching. And I don't think to what happens tonight or tomorrow, or hopefully not in the ensuing weeks. Amen. I hope it doesn't get into that. I hope we don't get into this long, drawn-out lawsuit thing kind of thing going on. But whatever happens, I'm pretty sure God's church is going to keep on going. The gospel is going to keep on being preached, and we're going to all be okay. We won't like some of the things that are going to happen. Amen. I won't be happy with some of the things that are going to happen. But there's not much I can do about it. And now, that's the end of my political speech. The pastor's not here, so he won't give you a long political speech. But I was doing this series through the book of Proverbs, and it's funny how I had this message, and I was going to preach it, I think, maybe 6-8 weeks ago. It's been quite a long time since I had this message. I didn't preach it that night. The first time I thought, well, this would be the message for that night. So kind of set it, you know, back in the back, and, you know, maybe God's got that for another time. And then about 4 or 5 weeks ago, I preached again on a Wednesday night, pulled the message out. No, that's just not what God would have me preach. And then yesterday, I was looking through some things, and this message came up again. I thought, yeah, this is what God wants me to preach for this time. So I said I'm going to preach this series of the book of Proverbs, so I want you to turn to the book of Psalms. Psalm chapter 1. I just want to, kind of the jumping off point, Psalm chapter 1. Most of you know the verses, Psalm chapter 1. Most of you can quote the whole chapter. But Psalm chapter 1, verse 1 says, "Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful." Now, when I read that verse, there's a lot of things come to my mind. I've heard a lot of pastors preach on Psalm 1, just like I've heard a lot of pastors preach on Psalm 23, tremendous Psalms. But when I read that passage, I still remember the first time I heard a pastor talk about Psalm 1, verse 1, and he preached a whole message on it, and he talked about how each one of those steps is a little further, a little deeper into sin. In other words, when you look at that first phrase, "Blessed is man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly," he said that's the idea of walking with or walking through or walking around that ungodly group. And then he said there's a second degradation there where a guy not only walks in the counsel of the ungodly, but now he stands in the way with sinners. In other words, he's walking by or walking with or walking through, but now he stops. Okay? A little bit more consideration. If you remember the story of Lot, you kind of same kind of idea, looking toward, going, moving toward, and then eventually ending up. And then he sits down in the seat of the scornful. Now, I look at those phrases, and like I said, a lot of messages come to mind in the past. But for some reason, when I read that this time, the last few weeks ago when I read it, "Walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly," I understand who the ungodly are, "standeth in the way of sinners," I understand who the sinners are. But for some reason, I don't think I'd ever heard, I thought about this for a long time, I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk about the scornful. Who are the scornful? We all know who the ungodly are, right?
Those who have different views of what God says, their views are just the opposite of what God says. We know who sinners are. They may be those who have the same views as we do, but they refuse to obey them. They refuse to obey God's law. But who are the scornful? Now, it's kind of an interesting word. Scorn, the word for scorn, is most commonly used in the Bible, in the Old Testament. And most of the time when it's used, it has this phrase. You remember this phrase? They laughed him to scorn, or they laughed them to scorn. Or, like in Nehemiah, they laughed us to scorn. And so you'll see that phrase. It always comes along with that. Nehemiah chapter 2, the enemies, Tobiah and Sanballat, they heard that Nehemiah was going to rebuild the wall. And the phrase that he said, that Nehemiah used when they heard that, they laughed him to scorn. In other words, they made fun of him, they mocked him, they ridiculed him. They said, you can't do this, it's a foolish undertaking, you're just crazy for trying this. And while they were working, were making fun of them. And you'll have that in society. People will laugh at you for trying to do the right thing. You see the same thing in Job chapter 12, where Job's friends come to him and they more or less accuse him of sinfulness. And his defense in his trials, he says this, the upright are always laughed to scorn. And if you believe in what's right and you stand by the truth today, you're going to be laughed at. In modern society, when I say things, a couple of weeks ago in Sunday school, I said something about homosexuality and same-sex marriage. And in this crowd, in this group, that's nothing. That's fine. You can say that. Nobody's going to give you a hard time. But there are certain crowds, you say things like that, you're going to be laughed to scorn. People are going to make fun of you. I've talked to people about evolution versus creation. And for me, it's not only scientific, it's completely logical that something can't come from nothing. Something has to come from something. But if you try to talk about creation in some groups, guess what's going to happen? You're going to be laughed to scorn. They're going to make fun of you. They're going to laugh at you. They're going to say you don't understand science. In fact, right now we've got the concept of global warming. I don't know if I buy into global warming. You say, what do you mean? You're a Baptist. You can't buy into it. I don't know what God's doing. I see all kinds of weather patterns, and I think the earth is going to get warmer and the earth is going to get cooler. And I'm not for or against either one, but I don't think you need to shut down the world. I think there's enough resources on the planet that's going to last until God's ready to end the planet. I really believe that. I think God prepared way ahead of time. So I don't worry about things like global warming. But if you don't agree with that, nowadays, you'll be laughed to scorn. So when you think of that phrase, the scorner, you've got to get that idea. It's most commonly used when you talk about the prophecy of Jesus. You remember Psalm 22 said, all they that see me shall laugh me to scorn. They shoot out the lip, they shake the head, saying he trusted in the Lord, that the Lord would deliver him. Let him deliver him, seeing he delighteth in him. And every Jew would tell you, when they read Proverbs chapter 22, they think that is a prophecy about the Messiah, which, if you think about it, it's kind of humorous. You say, what do you mean humorous? I think it's humorous because it's kind of ironic, because remember at the crucifixion when they laughed and they mocked Jesus on the cross and they said, if he's God, let him come down. Here's the irony. The fact that they were doing that was proving that he was the Messiah of some, laughing with scorn, saying he was not the Messiah and doing it the way they did it was proof that he was exactly who he said he was, and they were fulfilling the very prophecy that they were saying he was not fulfilling, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. But you see that phrase all the time. So what is a scorn? What does that mean? Okay, well, let me give you a definition. You've got three different sections on your notes tonight, and I'm going to just run through them as quickly as I can and make sure we get all this taken care of. And I think you'll learn something tonight. The definition of the scornful man. So how do you define him? Well, generally, if you're going to fill in your notes there, generally, the scornful man in the Bible is a man who mocks or ridicules or laughs at authorities. That's one of the big signs of a scornful man. And we'll show you that in the book of Proverbs in a minute. So somebody who mocks or ridicules or laughs at authority. I told you I preached a lot of these messages when I preached to teenagers when I was a youth pastor. And we always had those kids, whether it was in my youth department or whether it was in the Christian school that I taught in. We always had that smart aleck who always was a scorner, who always was negative, who always was causing trouble, who laughed at, I don't need to listen to them, I forget what they say, I'll do what I want to do kind of guy. And so that's the idea who a scorner is. He will typically ignore and deny the obvious truth. The scorner also does that. It's another sign of a scorner. He will ignore and deny the obvious truth. You can tell him until you're blue in the face, He's not listening. He didn't care. You don't know what you're talking about. I'm right. You're wrong. So that's the scorner. Now, in a general sense, specifically, Proverbs 21, verse 24 says this, proud and haughty, or arrogant, scorner is his name, who dealeth in proud wrath. Proverbs 22:10, cast out the scorner and contention shall go out. Yea, strife and reproach shall cease. So let me give you a more specific definition, okay? The scornful man is the man who displays a sense of superiority, resentment, and anger toward any and all who are in a position of authority above him. His scornful attitude, this is the part you need to get. His scornful attitude is most evident when he is confronted, challenged, or corrected. Especially when that happens by somebody that he thinks is inferior to himself. Okay? So when he's challenged or corrected or confronted, and he resists that, even if he knows they're right, that's a scorner. The scorner is the guy, so you're not to sit in the seat of the scornful. It means you're not to agree with that group that rebels all the time about everything. The scorner almost is the guy, it's a proud arrogance that looks for disagreement. That's proud of the fact, it's not just he looks for disagreements, he's proud of the fact that he's disagreeing. Anybody ever, you know what I'm talking about? You remember in high school and college, maybe you had a kid like that, and they look to disagree and they enjoy the fight. They enjoy stirring it up. Another name for a scorner in the book of Proverbs is a mischief maker. Somebody who's just looking to get in there. And sometimes a scorner will scorn even when he knows he's wrong. He absolutely knows he's wrong, but he'll still go at it because he wants to stir that up. His scornfulness is born out of an attitude that says, don't tell me what to do. I know what I'm doing and I know what's best for me. Now, when you read that definition, most of you are probably sitting here tonight and think to yourself, phew, so this will be a good Wednesday night. I won't have to worry about it. Pastor Morris is not going to get on me. I'm not a scorner. I don't have any of those attributes. Now, I will say this. Likely in the Wednesday night crowd, it is likely that we don't have somebody who, in the full definition of a scorner, here tonight. At least not in the biblical sense, okay? And that's a good thing. Amen? I cannot. I'm looking around the auditorium right now, and most of you I know, and I would not characterize any of you as a scorner. So yes, you'd be right if you said, "Well, at least you're not preaching about me tonight." Here's the problem: just like I wouldn't characterize anybody in the auditorium as a scorner, I probably would. To my knowledge, I would not characterize any of you as a liar either. But I don't know that I could. I think I could probably close my eyes and point my finger and just spin around and stop somewhere and point at somebody who has lied. Right? I'm not saying you are a liar, characterize a liar. In other words, that's your character, but that doesn't mean you haven't lied. And in the same way, that doesn't mean you haven't been scornful in certain situations. There are times, I will admit to it, there are times that I have rebelled against authority, even when I knew they were right and I was wrong, because I didn't like what they were doing. And it made me mad. You say, well, why did you think this message is appropriate for tonight? Because all of us aren't going to get our way in this election. And we have to be careful that we don't become scornful. How many of you would agree with me this now? I know in a general sense, a good portion of our audience tonight in here, in a general sense, wanted Donald Trump to win. Amen? I'm not saying you have to give me your political. I'm just saying, in a general sense. So, and one of the things you hated about the other party is they're very scornful, right? And their attitude, and the way they talk about our president, the way they attack our president, da 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 da. Right? Now, if a new president comes into office, you can't then turn around and you scorn him. You with me now? See, it's dangerous because if it's our side and you're being scornful against that side, we'll all say that's wrong, but it's just as wrong to go the other way. I'm not saying I have to agree with whoever becomes the next president. I never have yet ever agreed with everything any president has done. Okay? They're all human and they all make mistakes. And whether you like it or not, they're all political. There are political games that are played. That's never going to change. You do understand that, right? They get into office. They want to stay into office. They want to use their power. That's okay. So here's the deal. You may not be a scorner, but you can't be scornful in your attitude and your nature, not only towards any authority in the government, but any authority in church. We've got a new church, and we've got some things that have changed, right? Your classroom may not be where you like it. Things may not be arranged the way you like. You have to be really careful what comes out of your mouth, and I tell you, I struggle with it myself. So let me give you the description of a scornful man. Lest you think I'm free, I don't have this problem, let me give you the description that Proverbs gives. Here's the verse first. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 7 says this, "He that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself shame, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot." Proverbs chapter 13, verse 1, "A wise son hears his father's instruction, but a scorner heareth not rebuke." So if you've got Roman numeral 1 there, here's what I want you to write down. He does not listen to instruction. A scorner will not listen to instruction. You ever try to tell somebody something and they didn't want to hear it? And you knew you were right, and you knew you had the right way to do it, and the more you said, the less they listened. Okay? That's a scornful attitude. If you're looking at A there, he won't listen to instruction. When he's rebuked, he goes deaf. When he's rebuked, he goes completely deaf. The idea of rebuke, by the way, is the idea of correction, being informed about your error. Rebuke is more like, there's a very thin line here between rebuke and reproof. Rebuke is more the correction, saying that you were wrong. Reproof is, let me give you the idea to prove again, to give you the idea of what to do right. When you tell somebody they're wrong, a lot of times they don't want to hear anything else you have to say. I was at Menards on the far north side. I was trying to buy some blinds for our house, and this Menards had 2. I needed 8, and the Menards in Carmel had 3, and the Menards in Fishers had the others. So I was in 3 different Menards. So I was in this Menards over here. I watched the guy. He got the blinds out. You know, you have to have them cut to the right size of the window. On one side of the box, the blind box, it says open here. He opened it there. He got it out. He did it all right. I took those 2. I went to Carmel. The guy opened the blinds up. He had the 3 that he had. He looked at the side. Open here. He opened it here on this side. Took the blinds out, he cut them. I went to Fisher's, the guy looked at it, it said open here. He looked at the other end, pulled out a knife, instead of pulling the tab, and started to cut it. And I go, oh, wait. And he goes, what? And I go, you should open it on the other end. He goes, no, I shouldn't. I just saw 2 guys do it that work there, and I think that's what they do. And I can see very clearly, it says open on the other end. And I wasn't looking for a fight, I wasn't trying to be mean. I just said, oh, well, it says open on the other end. He goes, I know what it says. I work here. And then he goes on this little speech about how long he's worked there and how many blinds he's cut open. And then he proceeds for about 15 minutes to tell me why he cuts it open and why you can't. If you cut it open on the other end, you won't be able to get them out. And when you get them out, you won't be able to put them back in the box so you can take them home. I wanted so bad to say, come to my truck, because there's a whole set of blinds that I got at the other places that they open on the right end. And it opened really. I didn't do that. But the point was, the moment I tried to tell him he was wrong, he's offended, and he went into a thing about, man, you don't know what you're talking about. He didn't hear anything I had to say. He did not see. He never, by the way, he never saw the tab that said open at the other end. When I said it's on the other end, he didn't look. He just said, I know. I wanted to go turn it over. It really does say that. I mean, actually, there's big red letters that says open this end. But that's the way some people are. He just went completely deaf. He had no idea. And then B, he when rebuked, he goes deaf. B, when reproved, he gets hateful. He gets angry when he's informed how to correct his error. That's more the instruction side. Proverbs 9:8 says this, "Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee." The scorner not only will go deaf when you're trying to correct him, but when you're trying to when you tell him he's wrong, but when you try to correct him, he doesn't want to hear it. You ever talk to somebody and you say, let me show you how to do that, and you start talking and does this. Don't do this to me. I hate it when people do this to me. Yeah. I know. Anybody know what I'm talking about? You ever done that? Yeah. It's like, no, you don't know, because if you knew, you wouldn't be opening it on that end. You know, but yeah, they don't want to hear they're wrong, and they don't want to hear you tell them that they're right. Now, listen to me. You have to be really careful as a Christian that we don't get involved in that. Because I've got a feeling that if it turns out like we think it's going to turn out, unfortunately, we're going to hear some things we're not going to like. I'm not saying I can't complain about it. I'm not saying I won't voice my opinion about it. But I can't criticize the person and disrespect the office. That's wrong. Just as wrong as you think it is in the has been in the last 4 years. Let's not go be the guys on the next 4 years doing the other side. That's just as wrong. Okay? So I want you to understand that. Somebody asked me the other day when I did this, when I was teaching the teenagers a long time ago, they said, well, one of the teenagers, I love teenagers because there are sometimes they're just so smart. One of the teenagers asked me, he said, well, what about Proverbs 26? Proverbs 26 verses 4 and 5 say this. Maybe you've read these two verses. It sounds like complete opposites. One verse says, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou be likened to him. The very next verse says, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. So one verse says, don't answer a fool. The other verse says, answer a fool. And I thought about that for a long time. Here's what I think is happening here. I say it this way. Argue with the man who's looking for an answer, but don't answer the man who's looking for an argument. Anybody know the difference? You ever had anybody want to start an argument and all they really wanted was the argument? They're not looking for an answer. They don't want to hear your opinion. They just want to have an argument and have a fight about it. And that's what I think that those verses are saying. When somebody wants an answer, I'll argue with you all day long. I remember several years ago, an old friend of mine goes to a different type of church than I go to. We had a discussion over the phone and got into a discussion over email. And I said, listen, let's just forget all this phone and email stuff. Why don't we just meet together and we'll talk about this? And I remember we met at a restaurant. We sat down and we probably talked, I'd say 2 hours. And in 2 hours, he didn't change my mind and I didn't change his mind. But he was sincerely looking into what I was saying, and I was sincerely looking into what he was saying, and we were comparing. We both, I think, grew that day spiritually. We were both better able to take a stand on what we believed, and it was one of the best arguments, discussions I'd ever had about biblical truth. And it ended in the right way with, I still respect him. He still goes to another type of church. I still go to Fundamental Baptist Church, and I still respect him. But we weren't arguing for the sake of argument. We were actually trying to see, okay, why do you believe what you believe? And he wanted to know why I believe. Why do you stand where you stand? And I think that's where we have to be sometimes. And sometimes we get all upset. We get our pride mixed into it. We get hateful. We get angry. By the way, if somebody says something hateful and angry about the person you want to be elected for public office on Facebook, that doesn't give you no biblical right to say something hateful and angry back. See, here's the cool thing. I'm now on Facebook. That's right. I'm on Facebook. So you can read anything on my just scriptures on mine. Have fun. Knock yourself out. And some pictures, every occasional family picture. But I read a lot of people's stuff now. People, why are you letting somebody get you upset about something silly like that? And not just about politics, everything. You have no right to respond that way. Just because somebody else is being a scorner, proud, haughty, arrogant, doesn't make it right for you to turn around and be that way. See, when I said scorner and you read those verses, you know, I don't sit in the seat of scornful, we're all sitting here saying, I don't do that. Well, you may not be characterized by that in general. That may not be your general testimony, but at times we all go there. And that's just as wrong. Let me show you another thing here. Okay, so he doesn't listen when he's instruction. Number two, and here's a sad one. Number two, he doesn't learn from his mistakes. You ever met that guy? I'm going to use two words here in the next two blanks that I don't normally use. These are not my words, but I couldn't think of better words to describe it. I have a very limited vocabulary. Some of you have probably already noticed, I am not Pastor Monty. I'm fairly simple, fairly to the point, down to earth. Pastor Monty throws out words every now and then. By the way, if you ever see me sitting in service and pull out my phone, it is not to look at the Facebook. It is not to answer text. It's to say, what in the world is the definition of that word? How many of you know what I'm talking about? Pastor Monty has some words he'll throw out every now and then. I'm just like, what? But I'm pretty simple, but these typically would not be my words. So let me give them to you and then I'll explain to you. Number one, he doesn't learn from his mistakes. He is brash. B-R-A-S-H, brash. I looked at a lot of words to put in that blank, but I think this is the best one. He always thinks he's right. He's so cocky, so arrogant, so full of himself that he cannot even consider the fact that he might be wrong. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 22 says this about that person. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity, being naive or ignorant and uninformed? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Most scorners will deny the obvious right in front of their face. They can't even consider the simple truth that I'm wrong. I tell you, the longer I live and the longer I'm married, those two kind of go hand in hand. The longer I live, I'm 64 and I've been married 44 years. And the longer I live, the easier it is for me to say I'm wrong. Because I find out a lot that, well, I'm wrong. When we first got married, I was never wrong. I don't know what happened to me. But the longer I've been married, the more I realize, I don't know as much as I think I do. And how many guys your wife would say something, you say, no, here's what I used to do that all the time. Now I go, she'll say something I don't agree with, and I'll go, explain to me why you said that. Because 9 times out of 10, that did make sense. I was wrong. So I don't have to say I'm wrong because I didn't disagree. I let her explain it, and I went, oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Just like you said. But there are people, the scorner, he doesn't want to hear that. He denies the obvious. He makes excuses why he fails. The scorner simply cannot believe that his way is not the right way. It absolutely must be my way. You see these people in the last few months with the protests and all different protests. You talk to one of them. How many of you think talking to a guy carrying a sign down the street in a big protest, you're going to be able to convince him to change his mind? You're not. If he's gone that far and he's that radicalized, so to speak, and he's carrying a sign and he's screaming and hollering, and if he's setting things on fire and breaking windows, I don't think there's a time for a discussion at that point. I don't think you're going to change. That he's already gone too far. You can let that go. So he's brash, and then B, here's another word, not my word, but it's a good Bible word. He is brutish. B-R-U-T-I-S-H, brutish. He thinks everyone who disagrees with him is wrong. Not only is he right, if you don't agree with me, you're wrong. Now listen, I am old enough now that I realize, sometimes when you don't agree with me, I can't say you're wrong because I'm only giving you my opinion and you have an opinion. And when I can't prove my opinion biblically and you can't prove your opinion biblically, guess what? I'm going to let you have your opinion. That doesn't mean I'm going to agree with you. I'm just not ready to condemn you yet. And there are a lot of people that I somewhat don't agree with, but I don't have a problem with them because what they're saying is not anti-biblical. It's not unscriptural. Becky and I got married. I think I said this in my Sunday school class. She believed in her heart that when you have a meal, you have potatoes with the meal. Well, I'm from South Carolina. And I believe that in my heart, when you have a meal, you have rice with the meal. Amen? And gravy. Yeah. And well, gravy on the potatoes is good too. So, which is biblically correct? Potatoes are not biblically correct. Stop it. There's a lady siding with Becky. Now, and it doesn't matter, does it? By the way, I like with my meal now? Sometimes rice, sometimes potatoes. I'm fine. I grew a little bit. It's okay, right? And so what I'm saying is, you don't always have to be right on every little thing. I used to tell my kids that all the time. You're never going to be right on everything, so give up on some of it. There are some things you have to get. If you can prove it biblically, stand on it, fight for it. I don't care what happens. You fight for that. But come on, every little thing, you're not always right. You can't be. You're human. You're mistake. You make mistakes. You fail. We all fail. Okay. Proverbs 14:6 says, a scorner seeketh wisdom, and I like this, and findeth it not. He'll look for it, but he's not going to find it. By the way, how can a scorner look for wisdom and not find it? One, he's looking in the wrong place. But two is, when he sees it, if it doesn't agree with him, what happens? Ignores it. I don't care. That's just not... You ever had that argument with people and you prove 100% this is the way it is, this is the way it is, this is the way it has to be, here's the facts, here's all the statistics, here's how it is, and they say, well, I don't care. That's what I believe. Okay, that's part of being a scorner. Alright, you get the idea? So, Proverbs 12 verse 1 says, whoso loveth instruction, loveth knowledge, but he that hateth reproof, he that hates to be corrected, is brutish. Simply meaning resembling a brute beast. He's dumb. He's hard to train. He's stubborn. He won't listen to anything you have to say. Let me ask you a question. Are you willing to admit you're wrong? Should be, the answer should be yes. When I'm wrong, I'm willing to admit I'm wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the only really way I've ever learned anything is admitting that I'm wrong sometimes. Well, tell me how to do it. Show me what I need to do. All right. So one last thing in this section. Not only does he does not, number three, he does not love or appreciate, either way, phrase you want to put there, he does not love or appreciate those who are trying to help him. Proverbs 15:12 says this, a scorner loveth not one that reproveth him, neither will he go into the wise. He just doesn't appreciate that. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 12. If thou be wise, thou shalt be wise for thyself, but if thou scornest, thou shalt bear it alone. I put a little phrase down there. It's something I learned a long time ago. You can fill in this blank too. Wise men aren't learned men. L-E-A-R-N-E-D. Aren't learned men. They are learning men. You're never going to get to the point that you're wise enough. I'm 64 years old, and there's so much. Some of you are like me. The older you get, the more you realize you don't know. That's me. I think I know a lot when I was younger, and now the older I get, the more I realize, boy, there's a whole bunch of stuff I have no clue with. When they were building this building, Mr. Miller was in here a lot, putting all these wires and cables, and I went into several different rooms. You had to take a tour of just the wiring in this building. And I was showing Becky that one night, and on this wall inside that, there's just a rack, and there must be, what do you say, Bob? You're back there. What, is about 500 wires going into that wall? And somebody knows, Mr. Miller knows what all those wires do and where they go and why we need them. I just go, uh-huh. That's a lot of wires. I'm quite fine with telling somebody, I don't know. I came in one night. I had some friends of mine that were from another church. I was going to give them a tour of the church. I gave them a tour of the whole church. We came in the auditorium. And you know what? I'm not smart enough to turn the lights on in the auditorium. I don't know if you've noticed, but there are no light switches in the auditorium. Look around. There's not a light switch in here. You know how I turn on lights in an auditorium, right? You go to the wall and you... That's not how this auditorium operates. It looks like a soundboard. And it's got 1,000 little knobs and turns and turns. And somebody told me, that's how you turn the lights on. How many of you know I didn't turn the lights on? I'm not about to touch that board. You know why? I'll mess something up. There's no way I'm touching that. I never go in the sound room unless it's to talk to somebody. I never touch anything in the sound room. And I'm not afraid to tell you, I don't know anything about that stuff. I put this microphone on. I push one button. From then on, they run the show. They can turn me on, turn me off. Don't do it. And that's okay, all right? I'm glad. I don't know everything, but I've got to learn more things. Can I say something about this little section? I'm thankful. I was not always, but I am very thankful. I had very strict parents. My mom and dad, were very strict on me. Yes, I got spankings, and yes, I got restrictions, and yes, they took things from me, and yes, they said, you can't go there. And they said, my dad told me explicitly, you see that boy right there? I ever catch you with him, I'll kill you both. I look at that boy and I was like, I don't think so. I don't want to be around that guy because dad will kill me if I'm around that guy. Because he knew his reputation, and he knew what he'd do, and he knew that I would follow him. And I'm very thankful now that my parents were as strict as they were then. You know, I wasn't saved till I was 16 years old, and I can say this, and I'm so thankful. I never smoked a cigarette. I never drank a drink. I never had sex before I was married. None of those things ever happened. You say, why not? Because you were a good Christian boy. No, because I was terrified of my dad. And if I'd have done those things, he'd have come. Gloria's shaking her head. Gloria and Troy know my dad. No, Pappy. They call him Pappy. And you, even today, I'm a little scared of him. He's 88. I think I can whip him, but I don't know. I'm not going to give it a shot, I can tell you that right now. But I appreciate him. Scorner doesn't appreciate it. Scorner hates those who tell him. Hates his teachers, hates his instructors, goes to the church, hates the pastor, hates what he hears on TV, hates what he hears on the news, hates everything about it, doesn't care, don't tell me I'm wrong. The scorner is always that kind of a rebel. So what happens to a scornful man? I've only got a few minutes. Let me give you the end of this, okay? So what happens to a scornful man? Well, number one, he'll lead foolish men into trouble. Proverbs 24, verse 9 says, the thought of foolishness is sin, and the scorner is an abomination to men. Proverbs 29, verse 8 says, scornful men bring the city into a snare, but wise men turn away from wrath. You get one scorner in a group, and it won't be long before you have a lot of scorners in a group. And you'll have, that's how those, by the way, these Antifa rallies and all that, they build, because somebody else wants to join in, cause more trouble. You can always find troublemakers. You want to cause trouble? Start causing trouble. Get a little crowd, and it won't be long before you'll have a big crowd. And if you get one scorner, when I was a youth pastor, you get one scorner in your youth group, you got problems. Because if you don't sort that guy out and you don't get him straight, he'll affect the whole group. Same thing's true of adults in this church. You don't like what's going on. Well, go talk to the pastor. Don't go talking about everybody else. Go talk to the person that has the problem and get it fixed. Okay? So a scorner, he'll lead foolish men into trouble. Number two, by the way, this is also true. He'll teach simple men to beware. He'll teach simple men to beware. Proverbs 19:25 says, smite a scorner and the simple, that is, that naive, ignorant, uninformed, will beware. Reprove one that hath understanding, and he will understand knowledge. I told you a while ago, I'm thankful for my parents and their strictness, and I'm thankful for my brother for his rebellion. So you'll catch on in a second. You know what I learned from my brother? I ain't doing that. I remember more than once my brother would disobey my father, and the punishment he got, I was going, you call me a coward, you call me whatever you call me, but I learned from his mistakes. I remember one day my dad walked into the house, and between the kitchen, a refrigerator, and the counter, we had a trash can like everybody does usually in those spots, and it was overflowing. And I was standing beside the sink talking to my brother, and my dad came by, and he walked by me, and he looked at my brother, and he said, Victor, take out the trash. Just like that, that's all he said. And my brother, to this day, I have no idea why he said what he said, but my brother said, nope. So my dad, as he walked by me, and walked by my brother right here, my brother said, nope. And my dad, he says what he was going to do was open hand, just backhanding. He backfisted him. Pow! My brother went out cold on the floor. I was standing there going, I thought he was dead. If you ever see anybody go out cold, I mean, they don't just fall. It's just like a doll or something. It's like a, whoa. He rumpled up, and I'm like, are you? My dad gets down and he's like, oh no. You know, he's trying to get him up, and woke him up, and he said, are you okay? Are you? Set him up, and he's okay. He said, I'm okay. I said, and he stood him up, and he's like, okay, take out the trash. He didn't say no that time. And by the way, I never said that. My dad has never given me a command. I was young enough then that I remembered. My dad has never given me a command and I said, nope. I think even now, like I said, at 88, if he said that, I'd be like, well, yes, sir. Do I have to? I'm grown. But I learned something from that. And I've learned something from a lot of foolish rebels. I've watched their life and I've thought, I don't think I want to do that. Yeah, I avoid trouble. I don't run into it. I'm not that guy. Here's number three. And I just proved to you. Number three, the scorner will not live without judgment. Proverbs 3, verse 34. Surely he scorneth the scorners, but he giveth grace to the lowly. You become a scorner, God will scorn you. Proverbs 19, verse 29. Judgments are prepared for the scorners, and strikes for the back of fools. It always catches up to you. Any kind of, you do understand that rebellion, criticism, that proud, arrogant, better than everybody else attitude, I'm always right, you're always wrong attitude, is going to catch up with you. And by the way, if it doesn't catch up with you like it caught up with my brother and that kind of a punishment, it does catch up with you in the end, because proud, arrogant scorners always end up sad and alone. You know what? People get tired of that. When you're young, that may be exciting and be the rebel and be the the guy who's always fighting everything. And that may attract some people. But as you get older, nobody wants to be around you anymore. Your kids are tired of it. Your wife or your husband, they're tired of it. You don't have any friends anymore because you've turned on all of them. They don't want to hear it anymore. And you're alone. And that may be the worst of all judgments, to end up with nobody. I do a lot of visiting. I haven't lately because of the COVID thing, but I do a lot of visiting nursing homes, shut-ins, that sort of thing. And there's usually two groups of people in that group. There's some of our shut-ins, some of our people, they are the happiest, sweetest people you ever met. Their kids come to see them all the time. Their grandkids are always around. They come pick them up. They bring stuff. If they can take them out, they take them out. And it's just always. And then you got these people who nobody ever sees, and they're gruff and bitter and angry at the world. And I don't think they just became that way. I think that's because that's the way your whole life has been. And if you continue that attitude, in a sense, you bring that on yourself. I don't want to be that guy. I want to be the guy. I came in tonight and I was standing up there in the front, and several guys were standing up there talking to me. Where's Brother Kerr? Where'd you go, Brother Kerr? You were in here a while ago. Oh, there you are, back there. Brother Kerr was telling me a story about his cruise ship, and I interrupted your story completely, didn't I? Because my daughter came in, and four of the five granddaughters came in with her. So my daughter gave me a hug. And then my granddaughter gave me a hug, and then the next granddaughter gave me a hug, then the next granddaughter came in. And so all four of them went by, and then my nephew, Frankito, came in, and he gave me a hug. And Pearl, Brother Kerr, was sitting there like, waiting on to tell a story. You know what? That's okay. I'll take it. I don't want to be the gruff, mean-spirited person. I want to be a loving grandfather that my grandkids love and feel like they can spend time with. Scorner's not going to be that person. It's not going to be that person. One last thing. I know I'm almost out of time. Look at number five. Number four. Psalm 1, verse 1. We read it a while ago. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. He'll never be truly happy. That word blessed there just means happy or joyous. Joyous is the man. You can't be joyous and be scornful at the same time. You can't be joyous and be a criticizer at the same time. You can't be joyous and be proud and arrogant at the same time. You can't carry that attitude. I wrote this little thing for my kids a while back. The scorner hates to hear correction. Heading in the wrong direction, he walks away from God's protection and bears the sting of his selection. He puts it on himself. It's his own fault. It's his own doing. That's what happens to the scorner. I lost Brother Fielder. Did Brother Fielder disappear on me? Okay. Well. Oh, there you are. Brother Fielder, you're going to come and say a few things about the mission conference and pray about that, and then I'll do the other prayer requests if you'll do that, okay? I hope you'll think about that tonight. I know, like I said earlier, I know that you're thinking to yourself when you read that phrase like I do. I've read that 1,000 times, and I've always thought, well, I'm not the scorner. But boy, sometimes I can be very scornful, and I can be very arrogant, and I can be a very smart aleck wise guy. Let's not turn around and be the very people that we spent 4 years hating. Amen?